Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. An official with health insurer Moda says the company's plans to again offer individual plans in Alaska is an extension of its commitment to the healthcare market in the state. Jason Guti says the company sees Alaska's individual marketplace as having stabilized since its exit at the end of 2016. The state says Moda Assurance Company will join Premera in offering individual plans on the federally facilitated marketplace next year. Division of Insurance Director Lori Wing-Heyer said Moda had continued to offer small group plans and expressed interest in returning to the individual market when it could. She also said an agreement between Moda and Delta Dental of California negated any financial concerns the division may have had with Moda's return. Moda was suspended briefly in 2016 from offering health insurance policies in Alaska over concerns with its financial condition. Moda left the Alaska individual marketplace beginning in 2017. Wing-Heyer says about 16,000 Alaskans are enrolled in the individual market through the exchange. U.S. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is in Alaska this week, traveling the state to see how certain communities are using alternatives to traditional K through 12 public schooling.
Well, it really is to learn and visit a variety of communities, again, getting a better understanding of the challenges of the remote communities in Alaska, as well as your urban areas and how you're addressing things in the larger urban area.
Governor Mike Dunleavy hosted DeVos at Matsu Central School in Wasilla, a public alternative school that officials say focuses on individual student outcomes. The school coordinates with district schools, charter schools, and private options in an effort to build curriculums around students. DeVos heard from staff, parents, and students about their positive experiences with the school. DeVos, a champion of school vouchers and charter schools, says that model could serve as a template for more rural communities.
I think this is a good example of beginning to think differently and creatively about what meeting the needs of individual students can look like. And it really does involve delivering curriculum opportunities at remotely in course choice.
When asked about whether alternative schooling options for rural communities would look like boarding schools, which many Native communities are staunchly opposed to, Governor Dunleavy interjected.
Some of those trepidations are probably steeped in history when kids were forced to go to a boarding school or forced to do something that they or their parents really didn't want to have happen. That's an era we're not dealing with now. What we're really talking about is opportunities and choice.
DeVos says that schooling alternatives in villages could implement local culture in a more robust manner.
I think the opportunity to actually embrace and celebrate the culture and the experience of some of the indigenous people is one focus of how to rethink education and think about it anew.
DeVos' tour of Alaska began earlier today with a visit to American Charter Academy in the Matsu Borough, accompanied by Senator Lisa Murkowski. Murkowski had previously voted against confirming DeVos as education secretary, citing concerns over DeVos' preference to private schools over public schools. Murkowski had stated that the charter school model isn't a realistic option for rural Alaska. DeVos is set to visit Anchorage, Nome, and Kotzebue during her visit to the state. The fishing season for fall chum salmon in southeast Alaska is just getting going, but earlier runs of summer chum this year turned out to be unexpectedly poor. As KFSK's Angela Denning reports, hatchery managers in the region are struggling to get enough eggs for raising future generations of fish.
Chum salmon are usually a staple species for southeast Alaska fishermen, but summer harvests this year came in well below average. By late August, the region-wide harvest totaled around 5 million fish, just about half of the 10-year average. And managers weren't expecting just an average year. They predicted another bumper crop of 18 million fish.
It looks like our overall chum salmon harvest is going to be quite poor this year.
Andrew Piston is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Pink and Chum Salmon Project Leader in Southeast.
It's definitely been a surprisingly poor year for hatchery chum salmon in particular.
Most of the region's chums come from hatcheries, and three regional nonprofits are seeing only about a quarter of the fish they expected. One program based in Ketchikan, SARA, or Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, saw only 20% of their 4 million chum forecast.
We've had a very tough season.
David Landis is SARA's general manager. He says their hardest hit sites were where they collect salmon eggs.
We're struggling to get our brood stock in the quantity that we need to have for a full release next year.
To get more eggs, Sarah is experimenting with a marine pen at a new site instead of their usual practice of capturing fish after they enter freshwater streams.
We're actually having these fish right in salt water and waiting until they are essentially ready to spawn in salt water and then extracting them out and taking the eggs that way.
Sarah doesn't expect it to be as effective as their usual method. A hatchery program based in Juneau, Douglas Island Pink and Chum, or DIPAC, is also seeing 20% of their forecast.
Boy, just kind of a striking poor return.
That's Eric Prestigard, the executive director of DIPAC. He says the company is scrambling to get enough eggs. They're also coming up about $2 million short from cost recovery goals. That's money made from harvesting the fish to cover the cost of operations.
We'll obviously dip in the reserve some. At the same time, I think we may look at, you know, delaying some capital projects.
Prestigard says DIPAC is hoping to get some eggs from a Sitka-based hatchery program. That's NSERA, or the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. NSERA saw about 30% of its expected chum return at a release site in Deep Inlet near Sitka, and 50% at Southeast Cove near Cake. That's enough to possibly share eggs with DIPAC. But General Manager Steve Reifenstuhl says it's still a bad year.
This is very difficult on the fisherman side of the equation for these forecasts that have come in so short.
Financially, NSERA is having less trouble than the other hatcheries because of an unexpectedly large fall chum return last year at their crawfish inlet site. Reifenstuhl says the return was so huge that it covered NSERA's budget for this year and part of next year.
We didn't even have a cost recovery goal this year because we made so much money last year.
Last year, many chums returned as three-year-olds, although most chums wait until they're four. So fishery managers predicted that this year's four-year-old return would be very strong. But Fish and Game's Piston says it didn't work out that way.
Kind of starting to look more like for those brood years, just a lot of those fish just simply returned as three-year-olds. And it's not panning out into large numbers of four-year-olds.
Other factors as to why this year's chum return is so poor are unknown. All the hatchery managers say they'll be crunching numbers and comparing notes this winter to try to figure it out. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Crews battling wildfires around the state reported good progress over the weekend, but the Sterling Highway is experiencing some problems. The destructive McKinley Fire burning between Willow and Talkeetna has calmed down, but continues to pose significant safety hazards. Winds forecasted for the area blew far enough overhead that they did not pose much of an issue for suppression efforts. On Sunday, the Parks Highway was reopened to traffic in both directions, although with a reduced speed limit. Fire managers hope to lift the Level 3 evacuation today, which will mean some residents are able to return to their property within the fire perimeter for the first time since leaving. However, officials with the state's Division of Forestry caution that the environment is still not safe, with falling trees and pockets of smoldering fire. On Friday, Matanuska, Susitna, and Borough Emergency Services Director Ken Barkley gave figures from an official assessment of the destruction in the area.
51 homes, 3 businesses, and approximately 80 outbuildings total.
On Monday morning, fire containment was estimated at 46%. There are about 450 firefighters working on the blaze, with another 100 en route from the lower 48. Similar number are attached to the Swan Lake Fire on the Kenai Peninsula. Overnight, that fire grew by almost 2,000 acres, closing the Sterling Highway for hours because of fire and smoke on the roadway, halting traffic. By this morning, traffic between milepost 53 and 71 is open to one lane with a pilot car, but fire managers are asking anyone with the option not to try transiting the area. The Alaska Marine Highway Ferry Kennecott rescued 5 people in Canadian waters after a small boat capsized Friday morning in the Inside Passage. The Bellingham-bound ferry responded to reports that a 26-foot boat was partially submerged near Humchit Island, about 200 miles south of Prince Rupert, B.C. Ferry Kennecott dispatched a rescue boat and rescued 5 people. The partially submerged vessel's captain remains missing, Royal Canadian Mounted Police confirmed today. Last Department of Transportation spokeswoman Meadow Bailey said the crew and master of the Kennecott did a very professional job in quickly assisting with the rescue. All vessels and crews in our fleet drill for these type of situations. And finally, an uncommon thunderstorm rolled through central southeast Alaska, knocking out power in Juneau for about an hour yesterday afternoon. Thunder and lightning was reported in Pelican as early as 8 o'clock yesterday morning, and then the storm moved through Icy Strait, Gustavus, Funter Bay, Douglas Island, and all up and down Stevens Passage. Wes Adkins of the National Weather Service Office in Juneau says thunderstorms usually happen less than once a year in Juneau. This one came with many lightning strikes.
Just looking at our indicators, I would say it was anywhere between 50 and maybe 75, which is a good bit for our area for sure. And around Juneau, I would say probably about 20.
ALNP reported in a tweet this morning that two employees confirmed seeing a lightning strike near the Thane substation immediately before the area-wide outage occurred. In addition, leading up to the outage, ALNP had reports of lightning strikes in Lemon Creek, the airport, and the valley. The area forecast tonight from the National Weather Service says rain and a slight chance of thunderstorms again. Lows around 50. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, August 26, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.